Welcome to the Design Imposter Podcast, the show where we explore the enigmatic world of imposter syndrome through the lens of design, community, and empowerment. I'm Monique Jenkins.
And I'm Jessica Vallis. We're your co-hosts of the show and the founders of the Creative Circle Collective, a design agency that strengthens community links for nonprofits and corporate businesses by creating impactful branding and websites. Join us as we explore the relationship between design, community, and creativity. Welcome to Design Imposter.
Hello, Design Imposters. Welcome back to another episode where today we're talking about the hidden costs of being a designer, agency owner, and freelancer. We talk a lot about, you know, going out and starting your own thing and how amazing it is to be your own boss, but being your own boss comes with a cost. And today we're going to talk about all the expenses that come with owning your own agency. This is a resource-packed episode, so grab your pen and paper, jot down some notes, and try not to overspend as we talk about these must-have design resources.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this one because I think that there are a ton of unexpected expenses that you get when you're a business owner, things that you don't think about that you naturally get when you work at a corporation, like Microsoft is something that you get at an organization. You can use Google Drive, of course, but those are things like that. There are expenses that you don't necessarily think about. Pen, paper, printer, all of those things kind of come as a hidden expense. So I'm super excited about this.
Yeah. And this is also a good indicator of what your rate should be. Because if you're charging somebody $500, but it costs you $500 for like all these subscriptions, you're undercharging. Yeah. So you definitely want to have a spreadsheet and keep track of everything.
Yeah.
So the first thing with being a designer and a creative is the software and the tools. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's Adobe. We can get over that. We don't need to discuss it. We know that one. but what are some other project management tools and software that you can expect to use?
So we know Adobe. But in addition to Adobe, I use Figma. So we use Figma as well. We use ChatGPT, and we have the premium version of services like that. There's Quillbit. There's Google Drive. You need an email address for your business, web domain, URLs, GoDaddy, Namecheaply, whichever service you want to use. And I also think there are some like extraneous ones like QuickBooks is one that we use as well. You have to get a tax accountant. You have to get business insurance. Those are all things that you don't necessarily have to do when you work in a corporate environment that you have to think about when you're a business owner.
Yeah. On a website side, there is a couple tools you can use. Obviously, you want to have your domain name, which is about $10 to $16 a year. Then your domain hosting, which can be anywhere from like $20 up, depending on the size of your server. Mm-hmm. And then if you're an agency owner and you're hosting multiple websites, you can have everything filter in to one platform and you can see all the plugins that need to be updated, what caches need to be cleared. And I use ManageWP, and you can turn things on. You can have free backups that do, you know, once a month, or I have clients that update content hourly. So I can set it up to back up hourly, but that comes at a cost. So for every client I have, I could be spending an additional $10 plus a month. So that's another thing to consider. Yeah, but those expenses can be billed back to the client. You just have to remember to put that in to your expenses. So when you're putting a proposal together, don't just say it's going to cost $500 for the design. It's going to cost $500. And then it's going to cost an extra $100 for the software and the development. So it's really good if you can like outline it a little bit. And if you're bringing multiple people on and they have a specialty, like you could say, you know, Monique is doing UX. It's going to cost $100. Jessica's going to do design and development. That's going to cost $300. The software is going to cost $100. And then your clients get a better understanding of where the money is going as well. And then you're not spending your money on their services.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was looking up a bill that I have with all of her business expenses in it. I think I spent $1,500 in the month of December on her business between like podcasting software as well as like Rocket Lawyer. We like got an S-Corp for our business and things like that. I think those are all additional expenses or maybe upfront expenses sometimes that you'll have to pay yourself out of pocket and don't get attributed to a client. So you have to think about the upfront cost of starting your business, as well as all of the additional monthly services and things like that, that you have to keep going.
Yeah. I mean, if you know that you're going to have to pay $700 a year for insurance, yep. then maybe just increase your rate a little bit to offset that cost. So yep. you're not using your earnings mm-hmm. to pay for these things.
Yeah. And if you're a UX designer, UX design software platforms range about $200 a month, and then you have to pay participants on top of that. So if you are sourcing participants yourself through your own social media platforms, it's free to do that. You just have to get them to, you know, sign up for it. But you usually pay participants, I would say, no less than $25 to $50 per half an hour in order for them to give you actionable feedback that you can apply to your client's website, and you would bill that to the client. But if you're using a software like usertesting.com, that could run you $200-$300 a month, depending on how many of them that you're doing a month.
So the next thing is hardware. And obviously we're podcasting in a studio. We've got Evan, he's brought his equipment. But when we started the podcast, we were doing this in the comfort and convenience of our own home offices, which meant we got our own audio equipment. So there's things like that. But there is also a reason why I am rocking a 2014 iMac. It's because it's expensive, thousands of dollars. Yeah.
I'm not rocking a 2014 iMac. We're going to get Jessica an updated computer, okay? I'm working on it, guys. But yes, those are some of the things that you have to give and take. Spending $3,000-$4,000 on a new laptop is not feasible if you're not bringing in the revenue source to kind of make up that. And then, you know, at the end of the year, you get to write off some of your expenses and things, but you have to pay for it right this second, which is always the problem.
Yeah, I'm always thinking, do I get a $3,000 iMac mm-hmm. or MacBook, or do I buy 4 plane tickets to Germany? Like, these are the things in my mind. I'm like, what is the highest priority right now?
And her highest priority is
I want to go abroad. So I will persevere, even though I can't get any of the recent Adobe updates for like the past year.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm rocking old software too.
They're like, yeah, we're done with 2014. We're not.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't really use anything outside of Illustrator and Photoshop.
Yeah.
So I mean, those are pretty standard. And yeah. I'm not doing illustrations either.
Yeah, yeah. I think, but then I think it depends on what your service is. So as a designer, if I'm an illustrator, then maybe I do have to have the newest, latest, up-to-date
kind of stuff.
Because the technology is important, and you know how fast things are running is important. But if you're just using Photoshop, I think that you're probably fine.
Yeah.
You can Photoshop on your phone now too.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
And if you're an illustrator too, you might have like the tablet, mm-hmm. pens. That's not my field, so I can't go into that. But also, like, if you're into the photography,
yep.
There's the camera, the lenses, the tripods, microphones, lighting. Mm-hmm. So depending on which sector of being a creative, yep. it can get expensive.
Yeah.
I think for design, we have a lot more programs, whereas if you're in photography, you have a lot more equipment.
Yeah.
And obviously, you have to do the editing and everything. So the next thing is your workspace. And this could be having an office space dedicated at like a building. It could be a co-working space. But rent, utilities, and office furniture, those come at an expense. Yes. So Monique happened to win our office space because mm-hmm. she's amazing and all these crazy things happen for her. But what were some of the expenses with getting the free studio?
So I had to buy a monitor, I had to buy a keyboard, a mouse. Obviously my laptop can go back and forth with me. I bought like a doggy bowl because we are doggy friendly. So I have a dog bowl upstairs. I have some additional snacks and things like that, coat hangers, chairs, a desk. So those things are an additional expense. And although we won this space for some portion of time, there will become a point where we'll have to pay for this office space. And I think it'll run us maybe $1,100 or $1,200 a month, depending on how large or small of a space that we want to get. We probably wouldn't go anything smaller than what we have currently. We honestly want to go bigger. So that would probably be maybe $2,000 a month in order to have our office space.
Yeah. And what would you say are some of the clear benefits? Like, why would you say, yes, let's continue to spend money at a co-working space versus I'm just going to do it from home? Like, how do you justify that expense?
So I think for me, it's easier to be outside of my house to get a little bit of work done. I love being at home. I love staying in my pajamas. I think, but there are some days because I have a small child where I just need to separate myself from my home environment. And I think that's a big part of being able to get work done is being able to step away from family. I also think that seeing other people who are successful in their relative businesses inside an office space does a lot for helping to boost and motivate you as a particular person. Inside of our office space, we have free beer. There are like pool tables and a bunch of other nice extracurricular stuff that you can do. We get free gym membership. There's discounts on foods in the local area.
They do seminars.
Yep, we do webinars. We get to use conference spaces for free. So all of those things help to equate to that cost. So even though we'll be paying $2,000 a month potentially for rent, I run monthly events through a bunch of different non-for-profits. So if I don't have to find a space or pay for a space, I can leverage the space that we already have. That's super awesome. And this office space is absolutely incredible and amazing. So it's just easier to do it that way.
Yeah. So the other thing I'm thinking is that if you can't put down $400, $1,000, $2,000 for an office space, you can also rent co-working spaces for the day.
Yep.
A lot of them have like monthly packages where, you know, you can come in 10 times and it's, you know, $100 or something like that. So if you need to get away and out of your office space and you don't want to sit in a Starbucks and do your work, mm-hmm. that might be a good idea for you. And the other thing too is if you are running an event, yeah. Monique runs many events, and they come with their own expenses too with having a physical location. Yes. So renting the space, getting mm-hmm. food, mm-hmm. marketing. What would you say? Can you walk us through like a ladies' wine and design event?
Sure. So first thing that I do usually is put a call for speakers out on LinkedIn or some platform. That doesn't cost me anything except time. So time to create some type of graphic that's engaging enough to get people to kind of get pulled in. And then after that, I usually include a booking link, something like Calendly, which costs 15-ish bucks a month. I'd use that platform to do interviews with people. So I will never just like take a speaker and put them on and not know anything about them. So there's some background research and I want to meet them. I want to make sure that we vibe with each other, that we understand, you know, what the event is about, that there are clear and actionable points and steps that the person is going to get outside of that. Then it's writing event description. It is finding a venue, sourcing food from some local space. I always try to use a local place to cater food from. So a small business that maybe needs the additional support or like doesn't get recognized as much. So I'll do that, which is an out-of-pocket expense for me if we're not actually selling tickets that someone can purchase if it's a free event. And then sometimes you have to pay a speaker fee. Some speakers require a fee that could be anywhere from $500 to $2,000, depending on who they are. And then if we're going to get someone who's coming from out of town, there's a hotel expense, including in that, as well as meals, transportation to and from the venue location. So those are all things that you have to take into consideration when I'm hosting an event.
When you host an event, are a lot of them like free for members or is there a fee? And how much does that fee offset some of the expenses for you?
So I will try as much as humanly possible to make all of our events free. I think that there's a barrier to entry when you have to pay a specific amount of money to come to an event. Now, if I am going to have a speaker who requests a $2,000 speaking fee, then I need a way to offset that cost in some way. I try generally not to make events more than maybe 30 or 40 bucks. Usually on the like $10, $15 side, which I think is a little bit more reasonable. And whenever I do that, I always sponsor two or three tickets for students who might not have the ability to pay the fee to come to the event, but who we know are valuable contributors to the event. So I'll do something like that.
Absolutely. And talking about vetting your speakers real quick, obviously software we didn't talk about was Zoom. Mm-hmm. You can obviously get the free version, but then you are limited to 40 minutes. Yeah. And if you're having these very long conversations with clients, mm-hmm. it's not a good look when you're like, let me send you that link again.
Yep.
Because you get cut off.
Yeah.
And with the calls, mm-hmm. we have started transcribing.
Yes.
Which is an additional fee.
Yes.
But it is really great when you can take the transcription, mm-hmm. put it in the ChatGPT, and then you have a summary and yeah. action items.
Yes.
And so these tools do make work more efficient.
Yep.
Are they necessary? Not all the time.
They're necessary for our time and sanity.
Yeah.
Is what they're necessary for. But it really just depends. Because like even if you get Zoom and you get the cheapest plan that they offer, I think it's only like 15-ish bucks a month. But if, like me, host a lot of events, I need the one that provides me with the ability to do webinars, which is 50-ish dollars a month. So the one where you just have like the chat isn't sufficient for what I need it to be. The webinar is a lot more sufficient for like what I'm actually looking for. So it depends on what you're doing. If it's just client meetings, I see the cheaper option. For me, if I want to host an event with 150 people or 300 people, there's a tier classification on Zoom. So if you have 100 people, it's one price, 200, it's another price, 300, it's another price. And it can get really pricey very quickly.
The next thing we want to talk about is professional memberships and associations. So when you're first starting out, obviously you want to break into your local market and the surrounding areas. So one thing you can do is join your local chamber of commerce. That costs money. There's also local networking groups. That costs money. When I first started, I joined BNI, Business Networking International, and that was like $600 a year. Wow. I was only a member of it for a year, but I did recoup that money and more from that group.
Yeah.
I pretty much made websites and logos for everybody in the group, wasn't getting referrals, and then left.
Yeah.
And then the Chamber of Commerce, I guess it really just depends on where you are. I was in a town where it was very tight knit. I was a newcomer. Everybody who went to the networking events for the chamber knew each other. They only wanted to talk to their partners and their friends. So going in as a newbie and trying to network was very difficult. So I did that for a year, didn't renew because I was like, I'm just not making traction with these lifers from this town.
Yeah. And I will say Chamber of Commerce, there are drastically different fees. So I just looked in one part of our community, I think it was like $375 for the year. And then there's another sector of our community that I think is a little bit smaller, and it was like $125 for the year, plus an application fee, which could be $35 to $50.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to think about all of those expenses and kind of what you get out of those specific things. But there are other things, like I'm on the board of, or was on the board of AIGA Baltimore. There's a fee for services like that. It's cheaper when you're a student, so it's $50. But as you become a leader or a professional in your relative field, it could be upwards of $500, $600, $700 in order to be a part of organizations like that. So you have to figure out which ones are best suited for you. But they are amazing spaces for you to be able to network and to learn things. And I think you have to do your due diligence about what you actually get from these memberships and services. So paying $500 a year, I want to make sure that the membership that I have actually nets me at least $500 a year, if not more, in what I'm doing. Because they do host free events or paid events that you can go to.
Yeah, I was... You messaged me the other night and you're like, yep, I just got asked to be a speaker again. I was like, what are you doing? You're like, I'm going to events. I was like, okay, let me go online and look. And as I'm looking, because I'm in the York, Harrisburg area of Pennsylvania, I'm putting in different keywords and I'm like, oh, look, there's this conference thing and it's, you know, $250. Yep. Or like, oh, it's a 3-day thing out in Philly and it's $500. Mm-hmm. Am I going to get value from the speakers are there? Am I going to get value from the networking opportunities? And are people going to want to collaborate? I feel like when Monique goes out, she just meets everybody. She gives everybody's number. They stay in touch like they're besties, even though they just met the other night. And all of a sudden, they're an automatic resource. She is better at this than I am. So
I don't do anything. I don't know what
she's
doing.
She's got the better personality.
I do not have the better personality. I'm a person who likes to stay in my house and eat Cheetos and watch Netflix. And people just like me. I don't know what they were thinking. It's just what it is. Sorry.
The next thing as an expense is just insurance. You got to get it done. The last thing you want to do is get sued.
Yeah.
Or God forbid your house catches fire or there's a flood or something happens to your equipment and you're like, oh, shoot, I only ever kept things on an external hard drive and that crashed, which is important to have the cloud and various ways to back up your work, which, again, costs money.
Yep.
Like the cloud costs like $10 a month, an external hard drive. God forbid it breaks. I've been there and I've taken it to Best Buy and they're like, yeah, we can't recover this. And then you're spending $150 on a new external, but they've gotten cheaper since the original days.
Yeah, but even still, like in getting your business insurance, if you're working with clients, you have access to their proprietary information, which means that you are legally responsible for sheltering the information that they're providing to you because it potentially is proprietary. So when you're thinking about your business insurance, you also need to think about the idea or eventuality of potentially being sued by someone, and just not by a client because you leaked their proprietary technology. Also, as a speaker or as a person who gets speakers, you have to get a policy for the venue spaces that you occupy because there's, you know, a general liability policy because there's a potential that someone comes in as an attendee, they fall, twist their ankle, and they sue you because potentially they don't have health insurance or for some other reason for their medical expenses, and you have to cover that.
Or one of your guests is a little rough, and then the venue comes after you. So, I mean, there's a lot of different potential. But mm-hmm. I think if you're first starting out, the biggest one is just going to be to protect yourselves from any potential liability with your clients. Mm-hmm. It's very important to pay to yep. have somebody review your contract so yes. that all your I's are dotted, T's are crossed.
Yes.
You need to have a clause in there that, like, you know, I can use any pictures. Mm-hmm. I can use any of the pieces that we created together. I can use them for my portfolio. You have to make sure all this is outlined, and they have to do their due diligence on you as well and read these lines. And if you need to make adjustments to the contract, do it. But you can't just assume that you have the right to use their stuff.
Yeah, I think that you have to think about that. I certainly make sure that you have to make sure that you have an attorney who can review all of your work, or that you do your due diligence yourself. It's not feasible to get an attorney, you know, before you have even started your business and don't have any revenue to kind of deal with that specific situation. But you have to figure out, you know, what's the best path? Is there a space where you're potentially going to be sued over the course of the next however many months? And then think about, like, how you can actually, you know, do whatever you have to do. I think there are templates out there that you can use.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think AIGA actually has some basic templates for designers.
Yep.
And honestly, run it through ChatGPT as well. Like, if you say, you know, I want a clause that says, if I take photographs, I have the right to use them. Mm-hmm. Or if during the course of this project, you hire a photographer, I can use those photographs in my portfolio. Mm-hmm. And then just give it a prompt, add it in there. It does give it a disclaimer, though. They're like, we are not a law source.
Yes.
So double check what you're working on.
Exactly. But you also have to sign a lot of contracts as a business owner. Sign for your venue, or not venue, for your office space. You sign, you know, liability. If someone comes in here and destroys their property, you as your business owner are responsible for the things that people break inside of the space that you occupy. And then if you're using a photographer, they make you sign, you know, some type of contract as well that they can use the imagery that they're getting for their portfolio.
Or if their equipment breaks.
Exactly. So you have to think about all of those things and construct to, like, what you're actually doing. Not to scare you, but just saying you do.
And insurance for a business can run anywhere between, like, $800 plus. I would say it's on, like, the $600 to $800 range if you're just starting out. You don't have a lot of assets. Mm-hmm. And they can break it down, you know, monthly. So it's not, like, a big out-of-pocket expense immediately. I think for mine, when I first started, I was paying $150 a month for insurance.
I think I paid yearly, and it was, like, maybe $1,200.
Okay.
But so
that kind of equates. Well, you always get a discount too when you pay by the year.
Yeah. But I think that I got, like, enhanced computer protection or something like that, which covered, like, my specific assets as a business owner, but also any proprietary information that I got. Like, if my laptop got stolen when I was on vacation and it had some client's proprietary technology on it, if they should sue me, I wanted the ability to be able to protect myself in that event.
Yeah, like leaked.
Yeah.
Data, and, like, it can
be
a mess.
Don't open spam, guys. Don't open spam. It will cost you, so just don't.
All right. The next thing is marketing and advertising. You know, social media is free, but there are tools you can use to make it more efficient. So there are scheduling apps, which can cost anywhere from, like, $10 to $20 a month, maybe more if you're running the agency. I think if you're just doing it for yourself as an agency owner, it costs on the lower side. Mm-hmm. If you're doing something on the agency side, it can be, like, $500 plus. Sometimes they're like, call us. Mm-hmm. And we'll set up a custom cost for you. The other thing is we're using Taplio, which helps create content for you. Mm-hmm. I did by the year, not cheap.
Yeah.
It was like $600, $700, $800 from the get-go. But it's a great tool.
Yeah.
I used it. Monique was getting more hits on LinkedIn. So I was like, here, you just use my account.
I hated that for me, y'all. I really did. I was like, no, LinkedIn.
There's also extended versions of the social media accounts. So there's LinkedIn Premium. If you're going to use any software for, like, editing your social videos, sometimes you got to pay to get, you know, the little logo off the bottom, which is annoying. If you're going to transcribe your videos, at least when I first started doing my videos, I would put the subtitles at the bottom. And it would be like, it would have the little name of the company on there. And I was like, I'm already paying to use this. But if I paid more a month, it wouldn't be there. Other expenses would be something like Canva. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good expense. Because I use it all the time. It really just depends. Like, yeah. I'm kind of deviating away from Illustrator and Photoshop for social media. I know Monique uses Figma,
yeah.
but I use Canva all the time. And it's great for clients who are not tech savvy. They're not paying for the equipment. They don't have the capabilities or know how to do it. So you can set up templates for them and then they can continue off of that. Mm-hmm. The other one is Ad Creative.
I don't know what Ad Creative does.
I tried it. I just don't have time to commit to it. I was doing that monthly just to try it. I'll probably cancel it.
Uh-huh.
Because I was like, I think we can just do this on Canva and Figma.
I still don't know what Ad Creative does. I was like, okay.
It's like social media post AI version, but it does like graphics and stuff.
Oh.
But I think we're getting a good template and a good rhythm going. Yeah. So I don't think we need it. And then we already talked about Calendly and scheduling tools and stuff.
And then one of the things that I didn't realize is I think it might be Zoom. I think Zoom has a scheduling tool embedded in it.
Yes.
Yeah. So you might not need Zoom and Calendly. You might just need one or the other in order to kind of schedule all your events and things like that. I didn't notice that until like earlier this week. And I'm like, why am I paying for both of these services? But I think we use them for different purposes.
Yeah. Well, you can send out or somebody can send you a Zoom link mm-hmm. and say, hey, the appointment's at this time. I use Calendly because if somebody tries to send me an appointment and I've already got something scheduled, it'll bounce back and be like automatically rejected. And they have to send like a new request for a time.
Does Zoom not do that? Like I know it's integrated with my calendar. I don't know if it takes into consideration things that are already on my calendar though.
I can only say I've only had one instance of this where mm-hmm. a client was trying to set up a meeting and he was like, Jessica, it bounced twice. And I was like, well, I've got the day blocked off or like I've got an appointment.
Yeah.
So that's a benefit. I mean,
yeah.
it's a small benefit.
Yeah.
You should really just coordinate with your client ahead of time on when you're doing calls.
And then you don't necessarily need Zoom. You can use
Google Meet.
Yeah, Google Meet in order to schedule your meetings. They integrate really nicely together and it takes into consideration the things that you have already scheduled on your calendar. So I think that that's helpful. So the next thing is going to be tax services and accounting. So if you're a freelancer, you're responsible for managing your own taxes, which includes employment self-employment tax and possible sales tax, depending on what your respective industry is. You also need to look for an accountant who can help you to manage your books, sometimes a bookkeeper to help you keep up with the month-to-month kind of expenses of things like that. So those are all additional expenses that you have to take into consideration. I know my first year as a business owner, I hired a tax accountant because I was just like, I don't like the IRS enough to like see them in person ever. So I prefer somebody else to handle that. And I think it cost me $3,500 a year that first year.
Yeah.
And then my accountant services have gone up. So I think it's $6,000. I will say I absolutely think she's worth it. I think that her service was outstanding. I'm a person who will pay for like the quality of the people that I'm working with. I like them and I want to use them. So I will do that. But I definitely think that there are spaces where you can reduce that cost by working with someone who potentially, you know, doesn't charge that price point and is probably just as effective. But I like her and I will be sticking with that.
Listen, if you're paying somebody $600 or $6,000 a year to do your finances, you better be getting $6,000 back in refunds.
Yeah. You can write it off too. You can write it off.
Yeah, but I know. But you're still like, oof. $6,000 and they want that money. Yeah. Don't break these payments.
It hurt. I'm not going to lie to you. It certainly hurt. However, when I think back on the experience, I think a bit of like I'm going to say Walmart Target situation. I go to Target more for the experience of being inside of the store, even though the price point is a little bit higher. Walmart is a little bit lower. And the way that their store is set up, the way that their, you know, customer service kind of reps handle you is a little bit different than I think the experience you get at a different organization.
Yeah.
But the same as bread. You could buy bread in two different stores. One of them can cost you $10 a loaf. The other one could cost you $3. It's just about, you know, what the experience or the ingredients or the quality of that thing is. And I'm willing to pay for that quality.
Yeah, I would say, and this is not a bash on by any means. Mm-hmm. I would say like H&R Block is probably like the Walmart in this situation.
Yeah.
You know what you're going to get when you walk in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the services are definitely more affordable.
Yeah.
It would be a big benefit, though, to have a bookkeeper and have everything organized
mm-hmm.
or to just, you know, focus on that. But that's, you know, time, money.
Yeah.
Regardless, you are going to need to spend money to mm-hmm. get your finances sorted.
Yeah. Now, bookkeeping, you can do yourself. It's just about you being diligent and going in every month and making sure you classify those expenses. I am not that diligent. Although I am in my personal finance, I'm definitely not in my business finance. And I think that the way that sometimes they classify things are probably different than the way that I would classify them in order to help you out with those things. But like, a thing that I didn't know is that I could write off a portion of my house because I have a home office. Even though we have this physical space, I also have a room that I dedicate to a home office. So I could write off that. I can write off the expenses of the mileage as I'm going back and forth to the office. I can write off the parking tickets that I get as a result of being in the office. Like, there are so many like little things that I didn't really consider
before
I had the tax accountant.
Yeah, don't forget about your electricity bill,
yep,
your cell phone bill, mm-hmm, internet.
Yep.
Heating,
yeah,
or gas, whatever, water. Mm-hmm. Like, these are all write-offs that, yeah, you can do. So sometimes, especially if you're for that first year and maybe things are a little tight, it does benefit you, mm-hmm, to have somebody walk you through and be like, did you know you could deduct this?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh shoot, nope.
Yeah. 100%. I think, you know, depending on what your business is, you can write off a lot of things. And I think that the tax accountant, at least for me, was really sufficient in doing that. But I could see going back to my first year that I probably would have used something like a TurboTax in order to, yeah, do it, because they have a business sector. And if they're already doing your personal taxes or you're utilizing their services for that thing, it was just easy for them to be able to do both.
Yeah. So the next part of this is continuing education. And that could be in the form of taking courses, attending webinars, going to conferences, and then things such as travel expenses and everything that comes with it.
Yeah. I am going to at least 2 conferences this year. One of them is in LA at the beginning of April. Sounds right.
Is that AfroTech?
No, AfroTech is in November. But April, I'm going to a conference in LA for probably about a week. And then AfroTech is going to be in November. So I get the opportunity to write both of those off, as well as the hotel expense. And I think you can write off like 50% of your meals and things like that. So when you're thinking about continuing education, it's not cheap. AfroTech, I think the student rate is like $250. I think corporate is maybe like 500-ish, and then executive is $750 early pricing, but maybe $2,000 without early pricing. Today's the last day for early pricing. If you're watching this, it's March 1st. It's the last day. it's the last day to get your early pricing. But
they're not watching it today.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. Sorry you missed it. But you should still go. It's an amazing opportunity. But yeah, for AfroTech, I think last year, I think my ticket cost $1,100. My flight probably cost me $700 or $800. I think the hotel was another $2,200. So maybe about $6,000 on one conference is what I'm spending.
But do you think because of attending a conference and engaging with so many individuals, one, that you got your money's worth just from the education standpoint, and mm-hmm, two, because of networking, you were able to recruit that from the connections you made?
I always do this weird thing at conferences where I go to all the beginner courses because I want to make sure that I didn't miss anything. And then I get in there and I'm like, I know all of this already. So that's my problem. But I think the opportunity to network with so many people across the country is absolutely integral to like my business practice sense. I'm so much better in person. I'm able to like vibe with people. I'm able to feel people out. I do get a little like shy and reserved at some particular points, but the amount of people that I met at AfroTech that like have actively contributed to my life at this particular junction made the $6,000 worth it. I know I'll make that money back tenfold. So for me, it's certainly worth it. But I think there are some conferences that you go to that sometimes like it's not worth it because you're not making the connections. And sometimes the talks themselves aren't worth it. I did hear Morgan DuPont, who runs AfroTech and is in charge of Blavity, say in a TED talk or something that sometimes people fly out for AfroTech without even having tickets. It's just that they want to be in the environment. And since they host so many events outside of that space, they have the ability to kind of network with the environment without paying for the actual conference ticket.
Yeah. So like they're going to like a bar or restaurant, then, you know, they don't, unless they buy out the place or rent it for the day. The next thing is client acquisition and the tools that you need. Obviously, we said QuickBooks, which can send out your proposals and invoices. Mm-hmm. But there's other software. I was big into just big into Dubsado when I first started because you can make templates and you could log the emails that went back and forth. It was just a very affordable software. I think it's $20 a month. But when you have retainer clients and things are constantly coming in again, it just offsets the cost. You don't have to make your proposal and reinvent the wheel every time you have a client. And then you can also break the payments up really easily. Other sites like Bonsai and Bloom, they do the same thing. It's just a matter of preference with what you want to do. I know you prefer to use QuickBooks. I prefer to use QuickBooks for the invoicing side of it. But everything else, I like to customize on something like Dubsado.
Dubsado was never really my jam. Although I think it's an amazing platform. Jessica had so much more success like setting up Dubsado than I ever did, which is a testament to me not being able to use technology properly. But for me, it was just, I create custom proposals inside of a design software for clients. And I change them depending on the client. So it's more of like a customized thing. You set up like packages that you can like kind of like dip and dabble out. There wasn't a need for me to use something like Dubsado in order to help that. In addition, I didn't know what I was doing as far as setting it up. So it was fine.
Another thing is your team tools. So if you're using Slack, Asana, there's so many different ones. There's also like Zoho. They had a lot of ads for a while. And I was like, oh, this sounds amazing. And, you know, you do the free trial. And the next thing you know, you're like $700 a month. And you're like, I'm not that big an agency.
And one of the other ones that I like, I think Monday.com or I think Asana, are services that you have to set up so that you could just track the project. Like project management services are incredibly important, specifically when you have a bunch of employees or contractors who are working inside of your staff. You just have to track a bunch of different things. It's easier to do it inside of a platform like that that can help you manage that workload.
Yeah. And speaking of your team, there's also the expense of hiring external people. And knowing what their fee is up front. So we had kind of touched on this on another episode where you're like, you know, how much is it going to cost you to do this logo? How much is it going to cost you to edit these photos? Or, I mean, it's the same thing that clients do for, you know, us. How much is the website going to cost? And, you know, or what's your budget? And you work within that. So, you have to take that into consideration. And then again, breaking down your proposal to say, you know, UX is going to cost you $100 because you know the other person is going to charge you $75. So you want to make a little extra off the top because you're going to need to project manage and coordinate with that individual. So you do need to know their costs and expenses. If you are going to send them paychecks, you've got to pay for that software, which can be integrated into QuickBooks. Our developer for the podcast, our producer, Evan, told us about one. I think it was like Patriot. So I have that on my list to go check out. I'll put a link to last week's episode and Patriot in the show notes. But again, it's like so many little things that just add up. And you could do it yourself, but you're going to fall through the cracks at some point. And it's too much work. You won't actually be able to do the creative side of your business.
And you have to decide eventually if you want to do the creative side of your business. I think that, you know, there will get to a point. There are much better designers out there than me. I think we will get to a point where our focus will be more on like client acquisition than it will be on the design side of things. And we will pay, you know, designers or hire designers to do that portion of the work. I won't say that I will ever step away in a sense that I won't see it before it goes out to a client. I will be very in tune with that part. But I don't necessarily think that I have to create the initial vision in order for me to feel comfortable with like looking at someone else's work and critiquing it to get to the place where we need to go with a client.
Yeah, I think too, you can hire somebody like a secretary, an office manager, a project manager to do these little things within your organization. So if you are, if the only thing you're passionate about is design, go ahead and do it. You can still be the founder of your company and do these things, but you can also have a management team that runs everything else.
I think one of the things that's important is understanding the cost structure of all of your freelancers or contractors or whoever the case is before you price out work. So one of the things that we have is a spreadsheet. A spreadsheet has all of the hourly rates of anybody that is a part of our team. so that we understand how much or how expensive something is going to be before we bring in, you know, a project. So say we tell a client the UX portion of this project is going to cost you $20,000, but the rates of hiring the four, you know, UX designers that I actually need to do the work is $60,000. There's obviously a discrepancy there. That's a point where I would be like, hey, we can't hire maybe two of these people. I'm going to have to jump in and do the extra grunt work in addition to managing the project.
You know? And then like we purchased thecreativecircleco.com mm-hmm. and creativecircleco.com.
Yep.
You want, you know, the shortest name possible. Mm-hmm. So why have more confusion if somebody else comes in and decides, oh, I'm going to be the Creative Circle. So let me differentiate.
Not in this one.
Yep.
Sorry.
You set up email forwards free. The domain costs you $10.
Yeah.
So how much, what's the price of having authority over these names to you? Is it worth $10? Is it worth, you know, well, too much. I don't really care. I just want my URL.
Yeah.
And that's it.
It depends on who tries to purchase it from me later. That's how much it costs. Because I've had a friend who purchased a URL. Some big company wanted to buy it later. And I think they paid her $50,000 to get
okay.
it.
So I was redesigning the Seven Valleys mm-hmm. Borough website. That's sevenvalleysborough.com. Mm-hmm. I went online and sevenvalleysborough.org was available. Mm-hmm. You bet I bought that one.
Yeah. You're going to come back to me if you want this later.
You know I bought that one.
I've also been at like corporate entities that changed their name. And I think we paid like $1 million for our URL because someone owned it. They bought it in like 1999, just mm-hmm. like knowing, and they've kept it up ever since. And they were like, yeah, I'm not willing to sell it. And I think they offered like 50 or 100. They were like, no. And we ended up settling at $1 million.
Yeah. Then there's companies where you change your name.
Yeah.
So one of my clients is, their URL was BLSR CPA. Mm-hmm. They changed partners. So now it's BLRRCPA.com. Mm-hmm. But because they've been in business for so long, they are going to keep the old domain
and
so
just
it can continue to forward.
Yep.
Because sometimes when you're going to type in a service that you've always been using mm-hmm. and the computer just pops yeah. up the URL yep. automatically.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even like your email address, I'm like, I'm going to email Monique and it pops up Monique at JKinsCreative. And I'm like, no, at Creative Circle.
I know. I deleted the one for Hartford Design Sack. So I stopped doing that. I was
yeah.
like, she don't live here no more. She's here with me now. But yeah, I think that is a consideration that you have to make as well, is how important is your URL name and then how readable it is, how easy it would be for someone to find. Like I know when we initially picked our URL and we had the Creative Circle, I could not get to that URL to save my life. Every single time I would tap you and be like, hey, what's our URL name again? And so we changed it to Creative Circle Co. Now I could find it just fine. But at first it was difficult for me. The was throwing me off.
Yeah. So the very last thing is just talking about unexpected costs. This could be that you are on vacation, mm-hmm. something pops up, it's an emergency for the client that you weren't prepared for, yeah. your team is not prepared for it, the rush aspect of it. Mm-hmm. So something pops up and now you have a rush fee, you're not capable of it, you've mm-hmm. got to outsource it.
Yep.
So always have a little piggy bank of emergency money on the side.
Yeah. And unexpected things happen all the time in businesses. You launch a website and all of a sudden everything goes down.
Oh,
and
yeah.
you don't know what the heck to do. And you just have to like get it done really quickly to like get things together. Those things happen and there's a cost associated with them. If you have to hire someone really quickly in order to get something out of the door, you got to have backup money
yeah.
for that.
I remember I was building out a site recently. We did the testing. Everything worked fine. Mm-hmm. And then this past month, plugins updated. They're no longer compatible.
Yep.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And the client emailed back and was like, I can see your login at the top of the page. And it's like, we have to clear the cache, but I have to contact my developer to do that. Mm-hmm. He is by project.
Yep.
And every time I tap him after a project's completed, that's an invoice.
Yep.
So to have a reoccurring thing and you're like, oh, I think we fixed it. Mm-hmm. And then the plugin updates again. And you're like, oh my gosh, like how many times? I yep. mean, and these clients are on retainer. You are not necessarily thinking, okay, I need to charge, you know, I'm giving them 3 hours of my time a month. Mm-hmm. Plus there's the 3 hours of emergency services that are going to happen.
Yep.
You know, these are just unexpected costs. And then you have to think, do I charge the client for this? Mm-hmm. Or is it my fault
yeah.
for not monitoring the, you know, disruption with the plugins.
Yeah. And sometimes you have to hire someone who just does that, whose job it is to make sure that everything is up and running and doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing.
Yeah. So, as we've talked about today, there are many, many, many expenses, costs associated with owning your agency.
Mm-hmm. That should dissuade you.
No. You should definitely create multiple bank accounts and have one dedicated just to your subscriptions.
Yes.
And know exactly how much you need to send over to that account, how much your yearly stuff is. And a good book to read on this is The Profit, or Profit First.
I think you've sent that one to me.
Yeah. I'll put a link in the description. It's like a $5 book, but this guy talks about how you need to have five bank accounts. 10% of it needs to go here. 5% needs to go here. 30% goes here. And every time you get paid, you have to distribute the amounts a particular way so that you're covering all your bases. So I'm trying to do that. It's not very successful.
But we have one account, but we have it broken up in a way where it has five sections.
Yes.
So we don't have five different accounts because that's too much for me. Logins-wise, it's too much for me to manage.
No. It's all under the same account, too.
Yeah. So I was like, that's an easier way to, like, split it up. Like, you have a place where the money comes in, and then you just distribute it inside of your account. Although I don't know if we can do that automatically.
We'll have to see. That's something that a bookkeeper and an accountant could probably do. And we wouldn't have to worry about it.
See? That's the $6,000 right there that I'm paying for the tax services. I do have a question before we end.
All right.
So there are a lot of things that we talked about. What do you think on a monthly basis is like, you know, the what's the number? Like someone's like, okay, I'm starting a business. I probably need to have at least $500 a month in order to start my business monthly for the first year.
Yeah, I would absolutely say $500.
$500?
It depends on how much you're bringing in and the range of clients. If you're just starting out, maybe you're still working in corporate and you're just like testing the waters, I would say $500 max. You need to make sure that you're bringing in more than $500 a month.
Yeah.
If not, you need to scale back on your subscriptions. If you are getting larger clients, and like for me, I've got a ton of clients who use the same plugins. I'm not using the free version. I'm using the premium. And that costs more. But again, it's the opportunity cost of everything.
Okay.
How much do you think we spend right now?
Since in December.
Well, not considering like all of the startup fees.
Probably closer to $700, $800.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. I think $700 or $800.
We do usually buy like 1 year subscriptions once a month.
Yeah.
So maybe closer to $14. Yeah. I don't know.
Probably. I will say I do think it's helpful sometimes. Catch them on Black Friday. But I do think it's absolutely sometimes to just pay it out for the year. I just don't need another thing hit in my bank account. I'd rather just give them $300 or $400 right now and like just be done with
it. Yeah, and then just put a reminder in your phone or on your calendar that, hey, this expense comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Let your bookkeeper know. Yeah. And yeah, so owning an agency is not just, oh, my client paid me $500 and now $500 goes into my bank account.
It is not how it works.
No. It will all catch up to you in the end.
Yeah.
So price your work appropriately to cover all these expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have any helpful programs that you use, please shoot them over to us so we can try them and recommend them to future listeners.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Until next time.
See you guys. As we conclude another episode of the Design Imposter Podcast, remember, self-doubt may be a universal experience, but it should never define your worth or potential.
Embrace the power of your creativity, trust in your abilities, and continue creating fearlessly. You belong in this space, and your contributions are invaluable to your community and those around you.
Thank you for being a part of the Design Imposter community, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and leave a review to help other imposters find us.
Until our next episode, keep those headphones ready.